Good to have you along. Yours truly, Ron Stafford, with you. Another exciting edition of Duncan's Pulse, where we truly take the pulse of those newsmakers making headlines here and around Howard Community College. Occasionally, I get some emails into my inbox of various events and meetings. And of course, Candace DePass helps me out tremendously with that. We had a wonderful conversation with a woman. I think it was basically email across the Great Divide, if you would. I got an email, I guess, a few weeks ago. There was an event here on campus, Tuesday, March 20th. The title I'm looking at here is called Footprints in the Digital Dust, What Secret Artificial Intelligence Can Discover from Social Media. And the speaker we had here on campus was Dr. Jennifer Golbeck, and she is an associate professor at the University of Maryland in College Park, and she is also the director of the Human-Computer Interaction Lab. And Candace joins me in studio, and Jennifer joins me by phone. Jennifer, how are you?
Good. Glad to be here.
Candace, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me back.
You're welcome. This is going to be a wonderful conversation. Candace, just for our listeners who didn't hear our previous conversations, just give us a quick bio, and then we'll get a bio on The Good Doctor, if you would.
Sure. So, again, my name is Candace DePass. I am the Assistant Director of Co-Curricular Programs in the Office of Student Life. I work with faculty to plan programs that complement what they're doing in the classroom, among other things in our office, but I also serve in an ex officio capacity on the Howard County Book Connection. And so in serving in that role, I helped the committee to plan programs that revolve around themes in the Book Connection book each year. And that's how I ended up getting in contact with Dr. Golbeck.
Excellent. Doctor, I'm looking here at your bio. You're an expert in social networks, social media privacy, and security on the web. Basically everything I am not, which is a good thing.
Trying to keep you safe.
That's right. That's exactly right. How long have you been at the University of Maryland in College Park? Biographical information on yourself, if you would.
Yeah, I've actually been here for a while. I grew up in Illinois, and I did my undergrad and my master's there, and then I came out to the University of Maryland at College Park in 2001 to do my PhD. I expected I'd leave after that, but I kind of stuck around, so I joined the faculty in 2007. My PhD is in computer science, and now I'm in information studies, which is this very interdisciplinary space, which has been great, and I'm on the faculty there. Study social media, social networks, run a little social media empire for my dogs, who are very popular on the internet, and go around freaking people out about all the things we can do with your data.
Yes, we're going to talk about that in a minute. How did you get involved in computer science and working with computers? Just a fascination long ago, or just how did you come involved with this?
It took me a long time to realize it's what I should be doing. I definitely was always interested. I had a Commodore 64 as my first computer when I was six.
Yes.
Yeah, I wrote my first computer program when I was six. It just printed an infinite loop of Happy Easter because I think we got it, that weekend. But I went through 3 years of undergrad as an economics major before I kind of realized, like, oh, computer science is actually what I should be doing. Changed my major my fourth year, struggled a lot, but managed to get through it. You know, at that point, I finished undergrad in 99, there was no social media. And I remember starting my PhD in 2001 and saying to my advisor, you know, I think social networks are really interesting in sociology. Like, maybe we could try putting some of those on the web. He was like, interesting idea. Huh. And, it just happened that this is when kind of MySpace and eventually Facebook came about. And so I was really lucky that my interest happened to intersect with really this society changing thing starting to emerge online.
So you were right at the forefront of this whole thing blossoming then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been so lucky, right? Because I started studying it literally as it came about, and so I've been able to really keep up with everything that's been going on because I've been studying it since the start.
That's fantastic. I'm looking here. You are the director of the Human and Computer Interaction Lab.
Yeah, so that lab has been around since the 80s. It's one of the oldest labs that does this in the world. I'm actually now a director emeritus. I've passed it on to a new person to direct it. But we study everything with respect to how people interact with computers, and of course now that includes your mobile devices.
Yes, yes.
Early research in the lab was on things like the mouse and the graphical user interface, which, you know, if you remember back to those early days, was a big revolution in computing.
Right.
And now we look at everything from, you know, social media, like I study, to visualizing information, to how to help people, whether they're disabled or older, you know, with special needs, what kind of technology can support them.
Interesting. Sounds wonderful. Let's talk about the event itself. How was this attended? This was Tuesday, March 20th at RCF. How was this attended, Candace? Was this a lot of people that showed up?
It was. You know, one of the things that I really enjoy about my role in particular is, again, finding those partnerships and reaching out to faculty. And so I had reached out to Dr. Valinsky in Business and Computer Systems and, you know, letting her know, like, a lot of the programs that we're going to be doing this year revolve around things within the computer systems area.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, definitely share with students in your sphere of influence and the faculty. So we definitely got a lot of great representation from that area, as well as just, you know, folks across the campus. So
okay.
I want to say we had around 60 or so people there.
Okay.
So that, you
that's
know,
good.
For us, that's a great number.
That is.
Thankfully, the timing of the event could not have been better because the snow was an issue later on in the day. And so we were able to get out of there before the college closed. So I was very thankful for that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Was that interesting, Doctor, navigating HCC with snow? Because I remember, I think it was that day I had to leave at 1:30 because I was here at the station. We had to get out of town and everything else.
Yeah.
Were you pleased at the turnout, Jennifer, and just the interaction with the students here at HCC?
It was great, yeah. And I kind of slid my way up there from College Park, and I was worried, you know, that no one would be able to brave it and get out there, which would have been completely understandable. But, yeah, the room was full. The students and the faculty were great. We had tons of interesting questions and discussion. And then I got to leave with everybody else on campus because of the snow and make it home. But it was a great time.
Excellent. We've got about 2 minutes left to our first break. Let's just dive right into the topic here. The initial email I got from both you and from Candace, it says, whether it's using social media, shopping online, or just existing in today's digital world, we leave extensive digital traces. I went online and I saw articles about AI and how that's, you know, kind of permeating into our life. Let me just put this right out there. Is this something we should really be freaked out about before we get into this whole thing? Should we just be worried or what?
I think we should have a baseline of worry. You know, on one hand, leaving behind all these traces of what we do is just a natural side effect of having a digital environment. But we're also in a space now where there's this really massive industrial surveillance mechanism that's been set up. And I kind of leave the government out of this. We can certainly talk about that. But this is really companies surveilling our every move in a whole bunch of different ways. And that data by itself is very powerful and can be really invasive. But then when you combine it with some of the technology that we'll talk about later, it can really reveal tons of things about you. And I think that's something that we should be wary about and thinking about.
Interesting. Yeah, because I know Zuckerberg was recently on Capitol Hill and Facebook and all the privacy issues. I mean, it seems like that guy is going to Capitol Hill every other year just to defend his own company about what he's, you know, how much of a pervasive influence. I mean, my wife checks news on Facebook. She goes on Facebook every single day, and it's fine, but that has become a go-to point. I'm not singling out Facebook by any means, but that's become really a go-to point that everybody checks in with on a daily basis.
It has, and they collect so much about us, you know, not just the things that we post there, but what we look at, including like how long you hover over a story, even if you don't click on it.
Wow.
You know, like we've seen in the news lately, they keep track of who you send text messages to, who you call, if you have the app installed on your phone. A lot of stuff that we don't think they're collecting, on top of all the stuff that we're explicitly telling them. And that gives them a ton of power to understand us and our interests and potentially influence our behavior.
Let's take a quick break. Back with more with Candace and Jennifer. Again, we're talking about footprints in the digital dust. A whole lot more of great information coming your way in just a few minutes here on Duncan's Pulse. Stay tuned.
The Howard County Dental Hygienists Association is a local component of the Maryland Dental Hygienists Association, which is a constituent of the American Dental Hygienists Association. The association is a professional organization which represents registered dental hygienists who live or practice in Howard County. We are active in educating our local community of the importance of quality preventive dental care to improve total health. The mission of the American Dental Hygienists Association is to advance the art and science of dental hygiene by ensuring access to quality oral health care, increasing awareness of the cost-effective benefits of prevention, promoting the highest standards of dental hygiene education, licensure, practice, and research, and representing and promoting the interests of dental hygienists. For more information, contact us at howardcountydha@gmail.com.
Hey everyone, let's all stop what we're doing and take a moment. You see? Every moment can be kind of special. But they can be loud moments, goofy moments, dorky moments, it doesn't matter. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
And we are back. Yours truly, Ron Stafford, with you with another exciting edition of Duncan's Pulse, a very informative edition of Duncan's Pulse. Join me on the phone is Dr. Jennifer Golbeck. She is the Associate Professor at the University of Maryland in College Park and Director Emeritus of the Human and Computer Interaction Lab. She's an expert on everything social networks, social media, and of course, Candace DePass here is with me in studio. Ladies, thanks so much for being here again. We were talking before the break, Jennifer, about Facebook and the other companies. This is really a pull into what they want from us, is it? You talk about Google, you talk about Yahoo. Is it sales that's driving this? Is it money that's driving this as far as what they want from us? They're just pulling what they want from us. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, I think that's right. And there's really kind of two things going on here. You're exactly right. This is driven by money, mostly driven by advertising, or whether that's ways they can sell us products or ways that they can sell us. To advertisers who want to put things in front of us. So absolutely, like, money is the thing to think about with every question here. How can they make money on this? Mm. You know, the other thing, though, is that they know that there's money that can be made on this personal data, even if they're not exactly sure why. And so they just keep a lot of stuff, even if they don't have a way to use it. One example of that, people have been going through their archives on Facebook, which you can download. Like, if you go into your privacy settings on Facebook, you can find a place to download your Facebook archive, and it has all the data Facebook has on you.
Huh.
One thing people have found in there is that if they had the Facebook app installed and they turned on the video, so not for something they wanted to post, but I saw one girl who said, you know, she was checking her hair, so she just turned the video on kind of to use it as a mirror. She never posted the video, but Facebook saved a copy of it anyway, right? So anytime you turned the camera on in the app, Facebook was recording and saved a copy of it. Now, they never posted that. It's not the kind of thing they give to third parties. Why do they want it?
Right.
I think the answer is they don't even know. They're just keeping everything. And I think a lot of companies are doing this. I mean, I know a lot of companies are doing it, but I think the motivation is the same. They may not even know how to make money on this or how to use the data yet, but they're collecting as much as they possibly can. So maybe in the future they can leverage that, whether it's to better understand us or to make more money on it. And so what you get is this combination of not just them taking the stuff that they know will be useful to profit from, but them taking everything they can possibly get just on the off chance that it may eventually be useful.
It's truly Big Brother without Big Brother knowing that Big Brother's doing it, I guess.
It really is, yeah. It's like a distributed Big Brother that a lot of people are voluntarily opting into, and because they get a little bit of payback from it, whether it's some service or some convenience, you know, I think we aren't thinking critically enough about, is it okay that they're collecting all of this? Are they, you know, is it all right that they're really doing exactly Big Brother level surveillance on us?
Yes. Are there other companies besides Facebook that's doing this in a major way? And then I want to talk about the specific technology that they're doing with this. Are there any other companies that are using this in a, I was going to say, a pervasive way?
Like pretty much every company.
Oh, they are? Okay. Well, just I mean, obviously there are companies that are having more of a presence than not. Is this Yahoo? Is this Google too? I mean, obviously they all have the apps and everything else.
Yeah. So those big companies have tons of data on us. You know, what they're using it for varies. But any company that may see your transactions, if you shop somewhere, they're keeping track of everything you buy over time and using that to find things out about you. But any app you install, so Uber gets in the news for this all the time, but of course they're not the only ones.
Mm-hmm.
They at one point were recording everything that appeared on the screen of your phone. They track your location. They were actually tracking your location even if you uninstalled the app. they keep a list of all the other apps you have installed, how often you use them, like really deep surveillance, which again has nothing to do with them sending a ride to pick you up.
Right.
And they're not advertising to you. They're just getting everything they possibly can to know about you. So it's really safe to assume that anything you install or anything you digitally interact with is going to try to take as much information about you as possible, even if we don't know how they're going to use it.
Interesting. Candace, what do you think about all this?
You know, it's crazy the more and more that you think about it. And it, I think it's the challenge is that with us sort of having made this shift into being this sort of digital world,
it's,
I think it's kind of daunting when you think about ways to sort of mitigate it and how, you know, it's I think it's just, it's hard. It's really hard to try to find that balance between, you know, what do I download? What do I not? And, you know, but that's where I think that Jen in her talk, I think made it, you know, really, you know, clear, I think, for our students and for the listeners who are at that program. And hopefully, Jen, you can talk about this a little bit more, too, is just, you know, where to start and where to begin, because it can be just so much.
Yeah. We're not talking, you know, taking your Galaxy smartphone or your Samsung and just, you know, going to one or two apps just to check the weather, right? We're not talking to shut down everything just because of what they do, correct? I mean, hiding ourselves in the sand is not going to fix all this.
No, absolutely not. And I don't encourage anyone, you know, as a main solution to this, to just get off these platforms or get out of the technology. Step one for me is just for people to be aware. So what we've talked about so far is all the surveillance that's happening, all this data that's being recorded. On top of that is the fact that a lot of the things that you do can reveal other things about you. And I talked really deeply about this in the presentation, but, you know, on a high level, artificial intelligence can take these really innocuous seeming traces that you leave behind and infer really personal things, whether it's, you know, your race, religion, your sexual orientation, to behavioral things like if you're a drug user. We can find that out even if you don't explicitly say it, and predict things about you in the future. Will you develop postpartum depression? If you're an alcoholic, are you likely to recover if you enter AA, or will you just go back to drinking? These are all things that can come from that data when it's combined with artificial intelligence. And so I think before we tell people what to do, we want to make sure everybody understands the massive scope of what can go on, not just with the data itself that's being collected, but with the technology that runs on top of it.
Right. You were talking with our students here on campus, and you're telling them to be made aware. Were they responsive to that? They're like, no, I don't have really a whole lot of issues with that. I'm busy with my stuff. We need to know what's going on our screens. I worked with a woman. There was a song that she wrote saying, "We are technology slave." It's absolutely true. I'm just going to put that out there. In order to do that, we have to be aware of what's going on, because we're so glued to a phone, we're so glued to the computer, we're so glued to Facebook, or in even my daughter's case, to Musical.ly. First thing, she gets up and she does all this stuff and everything else. You got to be made aware. What's the next step? And I don't want to whet our appetite here. We've got about a minute and a half left to our second break. What's the next step that you suggest?
Yeah, you know, when I talk to people about this, I try to give really concrete examples. You know, here are some algorithms, here's some data, here's how it's being collected, here's what we can find out. And because we hear so much like, oh, be worried about your privacy, and you can feel both powerless and also dismissive of it.
Right.
So I've found the way that I present it tends to get people pretty freaked out and shocked by the end, which is great, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because then we're in a position of awareness.
That's right.
So, you know, like you said, we'll talk about this after the break, but
yes.
I think there are ways that we can take control of this, both by being careful and kind of limited in the ways that we give data away,
mm-hmm.
But also in treating some of these platforms more ephemerally than we might naturally do. That gives us a really large dose of protection that we don't have if we just let Facebook be the archive of everything we do in our lives.
That's excellent. Candace DePaz and Dr. Jennifer Golbeck back with more in just a minute here on Duncan's Pulse. Stay close.
Oh, look, there's one. Oh, come on, man, that was mine. Finally, I can still make it to class. Not again. Can't I just find one parking spot?
Don't be that guy. Why go through all the hassle of finding a parking spot when you can have someone else drop you off and pick you up for free? The Dragon Wagon service does all the driving for you without the hassle of parking. The shuttle is free and easy, operates Monday through Friday from 8 to 6:30, and drops you off right at the RCF building. All you need to do is pick up the shuttle on either Sterrett Place or Patuxent Loop, and you will be on your way to a more stress-free way of traveling. Also, for every 5 round-trip rides, you earn a $5 voucher for Starbucks, Cafe on the Quad, and Simply to Go. So why spend another minute being like this guy?
This is unfair!
Take the Sterrett Place shuttle or Patuxent Loop shuttle and be chauffeured to campus for free on the Dragon Wagon.
You know what really gets a party started? Indoor baseball. Yeah, just find a broom or a pool cue, and you can use, like, anything as a ball. Cans, bottles, shoes.
Hey, bro, toss me that avocado.
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Underage drinking and driving, the ultimate party foul. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Imagine if I told you that an earthquake was going to hit tomorrow right where you live. That it would be 6.5 in magnitude with aftershocks occurring twice 25 minutes apart. You'd no doubt talk with your loved ones and you'd make a plan today. It's true, I can't tell you an earthquake will happen tomorrow. But what if it does? Shouldn't you have a plan? Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
And we're back. Yours truly, Ron Stafford, with you for about another 8 minutes or so. Again, with me on the phone is Dr. Jennifer Golbeck. She is an associate professor at the University of Maryland College Park and director emeritus of the Human-Computer Interaction Lab. And with me in studio is Candace Paz. You all know Candace very well. All right, doctor, we've been talking about Facebook. We talked about all the stuff that they can get from us. Is there any way that we can stop this? Let's just put that out there first. Can we stop this at all? You can't tell them not to do this.
Yeah, that's right. So I like to break this down kind of into three chunks of who is it that you're worried about having your data.
Okay.
And my kind of representative chunks are like the person you're going to go on a date with, right? They're going to Google you. They're going to find some stuff out.
Yeah.
Person number two, you're in a messy divorce and custody battle. The lawyer's on the other side. These are people who are going to spend a lot of time and energy trying to find out everything they can.
Oh, yeah.
Group three, the CIA, which is not just the CIA, but you can also consider this any of these big companies we've been talking about.
Right.
Essentially, people who have kind of unfettered access to the data and a ton of power to get at it.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
So depending on which group you're worried about, there's different precautions that you can take with varying levels of inconvenience. I'm not going to talk too much about the kind of CIA group, because
sure,
whether that's Facebook or Google or actually the government, there are things you can do. If people are really worried, I recommend looking up the Tor browser. They're going to have access to a lot of this data no matter what, and it's hard to keep it from them. At the same time, I don't think that's main group we need to worry about. I think we need kind of regulation for that group. We can talk about that if you want. But what I really like to talk about is kind of that middle group, the people who are willing to spend a lot of time and energy to find out stuff about you.
Yes.
Whether it's, you know, it could be a lawyer, but it also could be, you know, an app that you've downloaded that's not from one of these big companies. That includes Cambridge Analytica, who we've seen in the news.
Right.
These are groups that want your data and are going to use it for reasons and are going to put some effort into it. How do you protect yourself against them?
Yes, let's talk about that.
And, you know, I think the answer is the way that I have done it, because I'm very privacy conscious.
Sure.
So I use Facebook pretty frequently. Every day I'm on there. A while ago, went back and deleted everything I had ever done. I didn't delete my account, but I deleted all my posts, all my likes, all my photos. It took me forever. But now I use this tool called Facebook Timeline Cleaner. It's a browser plugin that you can set up.
Okay.
Every 2 weeks I run it. I delete anything that's more than 2 weeks old on my profile. For my friends, they kind of see what I'm doing now. They can't go back and see what I posted in the past. But that's kind of fine. Like, it's really rare that we go back and scroll through all of everybody's stuff on Facebook.
Yeah, anyway, yeah.
And what that does is that it protects you from all these third parties, whether it's apps that you install on Facebook, a lot of apps on your phone, people who might buy the data, people who might steal the data, like Cambridge Analytica. If you do this, you have a huge amount of protection that you don't have if you just leave that stuff up there.
Yeah.
And so I think that's something on every platform that's worth thinking about, is can you use it more ephemerally? Can you not have everything archived there, but find some tools, and there's plenty of them out there, to help you automatically delete stuff after a while?
Has there been any backlash saying, oh, we saw that you did this, and you're not supposed to do this? Has there been any backlash in that, or is it just kind of go undetected, and you're just saying, hey, I've already got 2 weeks on you, you know, here we go. I'm just thinking out loud here. Even yesterday, my wife and I are trying to, you know, get Verizon to do some stuff, and they called the house 5 times to make sure that we updated the password. Always a nightmare. Has there been any backlash from you doing that?
So no, I haven't had any. Facebook, it's totally allowed in Facebook's terms that you can delete stuff.
Okay.
And this tool, it runs in your browser, so it can't steal a copy of your data. And it basically just clicks the delete button for you.
Okay.
So you're not breaking any rules. So really, it's just people who would look at your data. You know, I guess you may have a friend who's like, I can't believe you deleted that picture of us, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, right? Get over it. Yeah.
And, you know, as I mentioned, I think in the first segment, you can go into your Facebook settings and download an archive of everything you've done on Facebook, which includes all the posts that you've made, all the photos. If you say, oh, I have so much stuff on there, I don't want to lose it. Cool. Download an archive. You have a local version of it. If you really want people to see those pictures, put them up on a photo sharing site that doesn't make money from your pictures, right? This comes back to money, like you said. So then your family members can go there, they can see and they can check out the baby pictures, but you're not giving it all to Facebook, who's making money on sharing your data or giving people access to it.
Any other ways that we can sort of protect ourselves besides, you know, only having a 2-week timeline on Facebook to protect ourselves?
I think it's worth thinking about, what are the other ways that you're leaving data behind? So social media is a really obvious one, but we do it with credit cards, right? Your credit card purchase history is really easy to reconstruct. You can buy a lot of that data. We do it with all kinds of different interactions. So it's worth thinking about, which of those do you care about? Which of those do you want to make private?
Yeah.
I'm not encouraging everyone to like go back and just use cash. Like, I don't know the last time I paid for something in cash. But think about those kinds of other records you leave behind and what you're getting is a trade-off. So if there's some things you want to keep private, for example, there's a great story that I read of this couple who was having a baby and they didn't want any companies knowing they were having a baby. So they bought all their baby stuff in cash. They didn't put any of it online.
Interesting.
All right, there may be those kinds of things that you want to keep private.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's just worth thinking about, what are the kind of digital interactions we have? Because that's going to be recorded and used.
Yes.
Versus what are the ones that we can erase those records of, like you can on social media, and what are the ones that we can just avoid altogether?
Interesting. We have about 2 minutes left. Any other tips you want to provide?
I guess the last one would be, think about spreading out your interactions on different platforms. So texting, for example, is a pretty safe way of doing this. Your texts are generally not surveilled. They're certainly not made public. And that's a way that you can have a lot of conversations and interactions where you're not giving your stuff to a third party. You're just directly interacting. And then look for other apps that can support different things. And we certainly see this among, you know, students, which you'll see at the college, and even high school students, that they tend to use a lot of different apps. They'll use Snapchat for one thing, Instagram for another thing. And by spreading your data out, instead of having it all in one place, it makes it easier to go less surveilled.
Yeah, I was going to say diversifying your assets in a technology, you know, spoken, written sort of way. And Candace, you're nodding your head, so that's good stuff. How can our listeners, we've got about a minute left, how can our listeners get in touch with you? Or are you willing to, you know, have a conversation with them if they want more information? Can they contact you, doctor? Or what would be the best way? I mean, obviously, this was well attended at the event here on campus. Can they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. So if you're just kind of generally interested in this stuff, I have a lot of Twitter accounts, but my professional one is Jen Golbeck, at Jen Golbeck on Twitter. And I tweet about all kinds of these things, including tips and stuff that you can use to monitor yourself. But I'm also super easy to Google. My email is all over the web. And so if anyone wants to email me, as long as they don't mind waiting a week because I'm really bad at email, they're welcome to drop me a message if they have any particular questions.
Excellent. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us on the phone. And Candace, man, I learned a lot. I really did.
Absolutely. Same here.
Oh,
same
my
here.
Word.
It's great.
Jennifer, thank you so much for the time. Again, that's going to do it for me. Ron Stafford, thanking you very much for being right there. Until next time, make it a great day and an even better tomorrow.